serving up the champagne. Pop. It's my house. Come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Dino in for Jason Gibbs, who's here in Berea. As we've had a lot of player interviews and player sound. Cam Irving, Barkevious Mingo, Danny Shelton, which we will get to for you in the next couple of days. We'll bring those to you here on CBD. But today, our show is loaded. Peter Schrager, senior writer for FoxSports.com and sideline reporter for Fox Sports NFL Broadcast, will be joining us in just a few moments. He released a two-round mock draft today. That is his first mock post the big trade. He's got some insights for us on what he thinks the Rams will do, as well as what he thinks the Browns will do, what he's hearing on the trade front. A lot of the talk today, Matt Wilhelm, about the Browns and Sashi Brown.
Yes.
Looking to move that number two overall pick.
I've heard it as well. And I'll continue to throw this back at you. If you can't come out of your number two overall pick with Jared Goff, you've said it's Goff or trade back, okay?
Unless they really feel that Wentz is that guy.
Sure. Absolutely. You trust that as well, okay? So you trust their evaluation. So it's Goff-Wentz. If you do not feel Wentz is a franchise quarterback, and maybe he's in your middle tier, can you gain assets and still get him at 10? If he drops that far, or inside the top 10, what are you comfortable acquiring in regards to assets moving forward that allows you to stay inside the top 10, but move from two? Do you need is a future first in play?
It's got to be a future first. You got to be getting another one, and you got to be getting some picks in the top 70 in this draft,
which would be
second round, third round.
Okay, second round, third round. I was going to say third round or above.
Early third round.
Correct.
Early third round. Yeah.
Okay.
I think you got to get a bunch of stuff. I mean, you need a bevy. You're moving out of the number two pick in the NFL draft. But will that value be there? I don't know. That's really one of the questions. We'll ask Peter Schrager what he's heard about that in a few minutes. We will have Tony Franklin today, the offensive coordinator at Middle Tennessee State, who was Cal's offensive coordinator for all 3 years of Jared Goff's career. That's at 2. And then Sir Andrew Gribble around 2:30 today as well. So lots to get to. We've got your phone calls. I know you guys are blowing it up on Twitter, and certainly people are excited. People are concerned about the Browns trading back. And this is just something I want to say. And I know you could say, well, they have Tom Brady. Okay, that's fine. The Patriots have traded back more than any team in the NFL. They have traded players for picks more than any team in the NFL. It's about getting assets. They haven't even been great drafters. Bill Belichick, probably the first person to tell you, he has not been a tremendous drafter of talent.
And cut a first-rounder, another first-round pick this year.
Yeah,
correct?
Easily. I think he was second. May have been second. Was he first?
I think he was a first-round pick.
So it's about getting assets. So just because the Browns in the past have traded back and it hasn't led to success doesn't mean it wasn't the right move. It just means that the drafting was poor after those tradebacks. You can trade back, draft well, and really change things around, just like you can stay put, draft well. If you draft well, period, you'll do very well in the NFL. That's what the Browns have not done since 1999, and that's what they need to start doing if they want to turn it around. That and getting a franchise quarterback. Those are the two things that are the most important. Now, we are going to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline now and bring in our guy from FoxSports.com, Peter Schrager. Peter, how are you, brother?
I'm doing great. We're less than 2 weeks away. Let's get it going.
Can we get there already? I'm sick of this speculation. I'm tired of it. I'm ready to know what's going on. Let's start with the trade heard around the world. What are you hearing about the Los Angeles Rams and their intentions with the number one overall pick?
Yeah, well, what you're hearing is pretty much what I'm hearing, that right now Jared Goff is the leader in the clubhouse, quote-unquote. But I'll tell you this, last night somewhere near Oxnard, California, the entire Rams front office and coach, and I guess head coach Jeff Fisher, had dinner with Carson Wentz. So they wouldn't be having dinner with Carson Wentz if they weren't at all interested in him. I think they're going to do their due diligence a little bit more. But right now, Jared Goff is the leader in the clubhouse. And you don't make that trade. You don't buy the ring for the woman unless you know which woman it is. And in this case, I think they were making the trade to get Jared Goff first overall.
And Peter, just for our fan base who, you know, we've been very pro-Goff, but, you know, in some cases might feel like they're settling for Carson Wentz, as the Los Angeles Rams, who now have Carson Wentz out there in California, and it's reported that they'll do the same with Jared Goff, what's happening in these meetings to familiarize? Because the games have been played, the workouts have been done. What are you picking his brain to really understand at this point, as you mentioned, less than 10 days away?
Well, let's get to know the dude, right? And quarterback's the most important position to do that. So it's not putting him out of his comfort zone. It's not trying to get a gotcha moment. How's he going to gel? Let's talk football, but let's talk life also. I think both these guys are really interesting. You know, Carson Wentz's story, Jared Goff is pretty straight line, right? His father was a baseball player, goes to California. He was the number one high school recruit out of Marin County, goes to Cal, which is a close school, starts from day one, gets beat up his first year, and then kind of overcomes and has a good junior season, if not a very good junior season. Carson Wentz is different. Carson Wentz has never had a B in his life, was 5'10" coming out of high school until he had this huge jumps of a growth spurt, making him 6'5" right now. Missed a bunch of games in college because of both being number two to Brock Jensen and then hurting his wrist. And then shows up and has this huge last 2 years, and now is being talked about as the guy. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he's the anti-Johnny Manziel, and never has had less than an A in school, and he's been dating the same girl since middle school. So it's kind of this two different personalities. Do you want the classic quarterback number one recruit guy, or do you want the maybe a bit of a variable where we're not sure exactly where this guy came from but might have the bigger upside long term?
Talking with Peter Schrager from Fox Sports here on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. Peter, when you talk about to people around the league, what is the perception? Because it seems like there's a media perception about these quarterbacks, and we always know that that is not necessarily in line with the NFL perception of these quarterbacks. What are you hearing about how the NFL feels about Jared Goff and Carson Wentz?
Well, thanks, Nathan, for even mentioning that. Because I remember a couple of years ago, everyone in their mock draft having Matt Barkley go number 7. And the mock draft means nothing. Matt Barkley went in the 4th round. And that same year, everyone had Geno Smith in the 1st round. He went in the 2nd. And no one had E.J. Manuel going in the 1st round. He was the first quarterback taken. So you take that with a grain of salt, what you were reading in mock drafts from guys who quite literally, are writing these from their living rooms in whatever cities they're in. And they're not on the phones with teams. I like to think that I've got some intel on this. And Carson Wentz really was the star of Senior Bowl. This guy blew everyone away, and I know the Dallas coaching staff was with him, and they loved him. And, hey, look, he is a player, but Jared Goff never had a rising or lowering stock. All along, Jared Goff has been a guy that everyone says is a franchise quarterback. Even going back to November, December, everyone said, this guy could be the next Aaron Rodgers, Cal connection aside. So I think both of these quarterbacks are held in very high esteem, and, just because it was comes from nowhere on a mock draft after the Senior Bowl that Carson Wentz was suddenly a top 5 pick doesn't mean that NFL scouts haven't had their eye on him for some time.
Peter, the word today is that, via Bleacher Report and many other sources, that the Cleveland Browns are...
Bleacher Report. All right. Stop.
Correct.
The presses,
there you go. Either actively or aggressively, shopping that number 2 pick. For our fan base who may miss out on a franchise quarterback if Jared Goff does go number 1, who would be our trade partner, and how far back would you essentially see the Cleveland Browns going?
He wrote an article about this a couple of weeks ago, which you guys can read at foxsports.com.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, the trade actually hurt the Browns in a small way in that it took a little bit of their leverage out or took a little of their chips out. So if multiple teams wanted quarterbacks, now you have one less team that you can kind of negotiate with, because the Rams go up to number 1 and now they get the pick of their quarterback. So you're kind of left with the other quarterback, which... it depends. If a team really likes Wentz, they can still come up. But, the quote, and I think it was Jeff Darlington, who I respect as a reporter, was that they're actively shopping the pick. Well, the phone lines have been open the entire time. And I think when you look at the way this front office is built, and you guys were talking about it before I came on, but this is a long-term play. So if they think there's enough value to trade back and someone's offering them a haul to move back, that's not a negative on Carson Wentz. It's more of the philosophy that the Browns might be employing moving forward. That said, Hugh Jackson's a quarterback's guy, right? I mean, you look what he did with Joe Flacco, with Andy Dalton, with even Carson Palmer. Hugh Jackson knows his quarterback. So if he feels comfortable going with Carson Wentz, you're not going to get an opportunity, hopefully, who knows with the future, but you're not going to get many opportunities when you get the number 2 pick. And if you like the quarterback enough and he's sitting there at number 2, don't overthink it and say, well, look, we can maybe get a Phil Taylor or a Justin Gilbert down the road. Just take the quarterback if you feel comfortable taking the quarterback.
I think you're exactly right, and I think it comes down to, are the Browns, do they feel that these two guys are both franchise quarterbacks, or did they only think one of them was? And if that guy gets taken at number one, what do the Cleveland Browns do? I think that becomes the big discussion. And would you say, I know there are some out there who see it for the Browns, if they trade out of the number two pick, that it's already an unmitigated disaster. Is that your feeling and the thought around the NFL?
No. And I think that would show some ingenuity, some creativity. It would show that Sashi Brown has a control on this thing and has a plan. Like, hey, if we're going to trade out of this thing, it's not because we're panicked. It's been 2 weeks where we've been looking at it that we've got the number two pick and the Rams have number one. So they've entertained offers. I'd say the Jets are the main team to watch here. As that Ryan Fitzpatrick thing drags on a little bit, if the Jets like Wentz enough, I think that could be a team. I don't believe the Eagles and 49ers stuff as much as everyone else does. I would slow down on that. I think that's a lot of smokescreen stuff. I think the Jets are the team to watch for Wentz. And if they come
up
and
Bills?
They can move... You know what? I put out a tweet a couple days ago hearing a lot from people both in the Buffalo building that, like, you know, they're interested in a lot of these quarterbacks. I don't see them making a move all the way up to number two and mortgaging the future. You got to look at these GMs right now, right? So Doug Whaley's already made that trade and given up a future first-round pick for Sammy Watkins with you guys. I don't think that's going to be the case where they're going to go crazy and do that. There's a couple of surprises every year, so we'll see. But I don't think it's an unmitigated disaster. And comparing trading back to get, you know, you got, well, we could have had Julio Jones. At the time, if you go back and look at those draft grades from all the quote-unquote experts, everyone liked that trade. We got Phil Taylor and next year's first-round pick. Well, you took Brandon Whedon. You look at it last year. I'm not sure if I would have taken Danny Shelton and Cam Irving 12 and 19, but those guys could be cornerstones, and you traded back to get that kind of stuff. So just because one front office did something and it didn't work out, just because another one did something didn't work out, doesn't mean that the third time it's not going to work out. I would trust Sashi Brown here. I would trust Andrew Berry, who, quite frankly, everyone around the league speaks very highly of. I don't know him. He was with the Colts. I didn't know him when he was with the Colts, but he's now kind of running the college scouting situation there. He's only 28 years old. And I don't believe that Dee Podesta is as much of a stats geek, sabermetrics, let me slam my fist on this is how we've got to do it as everyone's portraying it. So this is still a football team. Hugh Jackson is a football guy. And I think that they're trying to make this work to the best ways possible for the Browns franchise. And if that's the case, trust what they do. It's their first draft together. Let's at least give them a shot before you slam them.
Peter, with the vacancy of the 32nd pick of the New England Patriots, that of course becomes the first pick of the second round to the Cleveland Browns, you have us going defensive line. Maybe give us a why you went D-line at 32, and then another position of need you could see as the Cleveland Browns going, and what talented football player that maybe as a first-round grade could be available at 32.
I'm not being snarky. I'm not trying to be pithy here. The Browns have a very challenging roster to look at on paper when you say you want to win some football games. So it's really best player available after that first pick. And, you know, everyone seems to think Robert Griffin III has gone under a transformation and is going to be some great quarterback. I've read in Peter King's article that you at least got to see him, and I value that opinion. I still say take the quarterback at 2 if you like Wentz. Then at 32, you got your quarterback for the future. You could take a deep breath, take the best player available. A lot was made of Josh Gordon and Johnny Manziel and some of these other guys. You know, I think losing Mitchell Schwartz hurt, and I think losing Travis Benjamin hurt. So if you see a receiver that you like there, that's not too early to take a receiver at 32. And I think maybe Laquan Treadwell is sitting there. Maybe a Corey Coleman, if you like him out of Baylor, is sitting there. But I took Jones because I think a lot of people have a first round grade on him. He can get to the quarterback. He's a big body inside, and I don't think he can have enough of that. One of those situations where if you have the first pick of the second round, you're going to be fielding a ton of offers. Last year, that trade was picked. The Giants moved up and got Landon Collins. You might be able to parlay that pick as well. It's essentially a first round pick at 32. So I just said best player available. There's so many needs on this roster. Anyone they can take, I think, would be fine.
Talking with Peter Schrager from Fox Sports, I see that being a potential trade point, and I just want to talk to you about your mock. You have Treadwell falling all the way to 30 and Corey Coleman going into the second round. Is there any intel that led you to those decisions, and what are you hearing on those two receivers who I think would be very attractive to the Cleveland Browns at pick 32?
Yeah, I've heard that this is not a good wide receivers class as far as when you compare them to recent years. The Treadwell hype at the Combine was top 5, top 7, top 10. He really can't run a 40 under 4.640, and it's very rare for those guys to be success stories. I think Jarvis Landry and Anquan Boldin and Alshon Jeffrey are the names you hear the most. Treadwell's pretty good, but I don't know if he's worthy of a top 20 pick. And then the guy that everyone seems to like that doesn't get a lot of press is this Josh Doctson out of TCU.
I love him. I think he's the best receiver in this draft.
I'm with you. I think he's going to be the first receiver taken. And then the Will Fuller, the kid out of Notre Dame, has a blazing speed, smart kid, had some drops. He might be the number two receiver. Now, Treadwell and Coleman, everyone in these mock drafts seems to love as like a sure thing first-round pick. I haven't heard from any teams that they are that. So Treadwell, tough kid, overcame the injury, good hands, runs the right routes, just not fast enough for me in the top 20. And then Coleman comes from Baylor where they tell those guys, hey, if it's not a passing play to you, just stand there and watch. So it's a big learning curve for all these Baylor wide receivers. I don't see him as a first-round kid.
I notice you also don't have a receiver that seems to be getting a lot of buzz from people around the league, and that's Sterling Shepard. Doesn't do anything sensationally well, but is just considered to be a great football player. What have you been hearing about Sterling Shepard?
Good player, late second, early third round pick, a combination of, one of these slot receivers, whether it be an Edelman or an Amendola type, but also the comparison he gets most is this Tyler Lockett out of Kansas State, who went to, obviously, the Seahawks last year and had a big year in special teams in that, like, the third receiver spot. So I'm not sure he's a first or second round guy, but I'm not as high on Shepard as others. Again, I'm not an NFL scout. He can go 25th, and I won't be shocked. But Senior Bowl didn't exactly light it up, and everyone was excited to see him. So I'm not sure he's one of those top 40 guys.
Peter, with the Rams now in control of number one, the Browns in play for a quarterback or potentially trading back, you've got an interesting, you know, third overall pick by the San Diego Chargers taking Joey Bosa. Why Joey Bosa there? Because they've been linked to DeForest Buckner, and you also mentioned Jalen Ramsey. Could essentially all three of those guys be in play for the Chargers at three?
Yeah, and Tunsil, right? I mean, Tunsil I have
True.
Dropping all
yeah,
the
Tunsil,
way to the Ravens
yeah.
at six.
Six.
So all those guys. Now, the Chargers, they've got both King Dunlap and the right tackle is. They just signed him as well. So they've got two offensive tackles that are locked up on contracts. I don't see them taking Tunsil. And then in defense, I've heard they like Bosa from people that know. So I'm with Bosa there. It's not every day you can get a pass rusher that you think might have game-changing ability, and he's that guy in this draft. Now, Jalen Ramsey, everyone loves. He could go second overall to you guys. He could go third overall to the Chargers. I have him going fifth overall to the Jaguars. He's a defensive back. I'm not sure defensive backs are game changers and change a franchise. And
yep.
for the Chargers, you're looking for that guy, and Bosa could be that one.
Yeah, when you talk about the Browns and you hit the nail on the head for me, I don't see anybody on this draft board as a defensive player that's a game changer. I mean, you just look at what it's been like for J.J. Watt in Houston. Until you have a quarterback, it doesn't really matter how good they are on defense. I think it's just going to come down to whether or not the Browns feel that the quarterback available to them at number two is a franchise quarterback. If they are, I think they take him. If they aren't, then I think you're going to see the Browns move back for someone that believes that quarterback is a franchise guy. If you had to put a percentage on it right now, Peter, what is the percentage that the Rams go to the podium and select Jared Goff?
I'd say 20%. I just think the Rams traded up to get a quarterback, and I think Goff's the guy. And I know that upsets a lot of Browns fans because all along I've heard that, you know.
So 80% Goff. 80% Goff.
Yeah, I think it's 20%. And, you know, the thing that kills me is that Pep Hamilton and Hugh Jackson are the Northern California guys. They've got actual connections to Jared Goff. There was a lot that would have made a lot of sense there. And it's very pretty in a mock draft to just put Tunsil to the Titans and give Goff to the Browns. But this throws it all off, and that's the case.
All right. Well, certainly follow him on Twitter, at PSchrags. Of course, you can follow him on FoxSports.com. Get his great article. He just put out a 2-round mock draft today that you can get. I'll tweet the link to that as well. And a guy who's certainly plugged into the National Football League. Not saying anything I want to hear right now about the Los Angeles Rams and their intentions, but we're going to be all right here in Cleveland, and certainly appreciate the time with you as always, brother.
Yeah, you know, and like in closing, I would just say I would have confidence going into this draft. The Browns have a premium pick. They can make trades, and it's a new front office. Why not? I would feel, if I'm a Browns fan, all right, this could be the start of a new era as you watch Johnny Manziel in a ball pit at Coachella. I think this is this could be turning the page. I'll take a kid who's been dating the same girl since middle school from North Dakota instead.
Would you ever wear a neck kerchief like Johnny Manziel wore in that picture from Coachella?
Yeah, it was interesting. I've seen a lot of those neck kerchiefs in these photos of Coachella, and also the girls all wear these flower headbands. I guess I'm just not a Southern California guy. I'm more of a New York City guy where you don't walk down the street in a net kerchief.
Yeah.
Unless you want
and Peter, that's
not, I know I'm a California guy.
I know.
Not happening.
Yeah, and
me.
I know we've never met, Peter. And you have
he's a fine man.
You have every right, if I'm ever caught ever in my life in a photo or in live, in real, in living color, have a neck kerchief on to kick me in the nuts as hard as you want.
Yeah, look, it was just all about the music and the good vibes.
The vibes, man.
The scary thing about it, though, and I'll wrap on this, I got texts from people around the league. Like, these photos are seen. Johnny looks like he's 150 pounds now. Like, he looks
yes.
like
soaking
he looks,
wet.
So, I mean, he looks like he is scrawny and skinny. And that, to me, you know, from a football standpoint, it sounds shallow because we know all the issues he's having off the field. But, like, okay, he can't play football the way he looks right now. That's even more concerning
right.
to me than that he was out partying. If it's not such hard drugs, like, I'm okay with an out partying.
Correct.
But he's got to be in football shape, and he's not.
No, and Drew Rosenhaus officially parted ways with him today. The other thing that's concerning about those pictures, maybe even more so than the neck kerchief, is Josh Gordon is in the background of all of these pictures. He just got his application for reinstatement denied. He can't go again till August 1st. Does the league – there's no way that Roger Goodell could look favorably upon him hanging out in these pictures with Johnny Manziel.
It's all about the
Am box, I wrong?
Man. It's all about the vibes. No, of course not. If I'm one of these kids, I'm different, I guess. I don't know. I'm one of these kids. I'm sitting in my room playing PlayStation. I don't know why.
Yes, play Madden. It's fantastic.
I don't get it. How good is Major Lazer or the other musical acts performing? Like, do you really need to be there? I don't know.
I love Major Lazer too, by the way.
Well, you do like that EDM. Do you think there's what right now? Okay, 80%. You've broken our. You made me sad once today with the 80% at least. Goff to the Rams. What's the percentage chance for reinstatement, Josh Gordon, as you see it now? Does anybody even around the league think he has a chance at this point?
I don't know. I mean, he's got to stay clean. He's got 60 to 90 days to stay clean. Just can he do it? I don't know. And then what, say he is reinstated. Do the Browns just throw him right in the team, or is there some sort of disciplinary action internally? I don't know. It's an interesting thing. If I'm Browns fans, I wouldn't be banking on Josh Gordon making many plays with Robert Griffin, his old college teammate, at the moment. That's what I would say.
Before the Rams made this trade and before that Josh Gordon's reinstatement was denied, so this will be about 2 months ago, I had visions, dreams of Jared Goff, JG to JG, Jared Goff to Josh Gordon, and now I think that they are just that, just dreams.
Yeah, and now you can dream of Carson Wentz to Andrew Hawkins, and away we go.
Doesn't have the same ring.
I just threw up in my mouth.
Doesn't have the same ring, but I appreciate the enthusiasm. Always a pleasure, brother. Hopefully I'll catch up with you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
You got it. Peter Schrager, Fox Sports, with us there to kick things off. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines. What do you think? You guys are hearing the same stuff we're hearing, okay? Sounds like the Rams are taking Goff. Bah humbug, I say to you, Los Angeles. Isn't it nice enough that you get to be out in Hollywood? You have to take Jared Goff, too? And that the Browns now are shopping aggressively, according to multiple reports, this pick at number 2. What are you guys thinking? What's the pulse of the dog pound? Let us know. CBD on ESPN 850 WKNR.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back. It is a new day. Yes, it is. CBD. Segura. Wilhelm.
With Dino. And Hugh Jackson banging on the window.
By the way, what did he say about the pipes, bro?
Mid Peter Schrager's head.
He enjoyed the pipes. He asked us, we show him. I said, Coach, is the field, is it that way? Or is it that way? Is it that way? Or that way? That's right. The snake was dancing. Holla. City of Squala. Dino, what'd you think?
What?
What'd you think of what our man P. Schrags had to say?
You know, very interesting stuff, guys. I've kind of come to the feeling, too, that your boy, Nathan, and Tony Grossi's boy, the apple of your eye, Jared Goff, is not coming here.
No, it's such.
I've had to.
It's really disappointing.
I know. And maybe things could change. But yeah, I think. I'm of the. I don't know how you guys feel, but here's the thing. If you're going to take a quarterback early in the second round, why don't you just take Carson Wentz? who's I think better than Jared than not Jared no better than Connor Cook
or
Paxton Lynch
or
Christian Lynch. Right. If your intention is to take a young quarterback high in the draft, why don't you just take one at two and just be done with it?
Because if you can, if you feel like you can get more assets and still get a comparable quarterback, because it would say to me, if the Browns don't take Wentz at two, it says to me that they didn't think as highly of him as the media does. That's what it would say to me. So in that case, there's no point in taking him. What the one thing that I have to say that is amazing about this, and I love my job and the interactions we have, but if you were doing this show, I would say a month ago, we were trying to fight people to justify why the Browns should take a quarterback at two.
Oh, yeah.
Like, never reach for a quarterback. And now the Browns may come to that conclusion that they wanted one quarterback. He's not there. So what they're going to do is get more assets. And now people are like, you've got to take a quarterback at two. It's just amazing how things have changed in just a little while.
Well, and I think that's why draft guides are produced. Analysts are paid a lot of money to speak their mind or be a draft analyst. Why you and I talk about the draft, especially here in Cleveland, since the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, the last game of the season, it's just naturally what we do. And you've never swayed, I think. And you look at the number of mock drafts that are created.
I will not sway
by analysts. I know you won't sway, but that's all fine and good. And if he goes number one, you're going to have to sway one way or the other. but and I think like even next week, looking at our mock draft, if we're going to do another one next week prior to the actual draft, how different is it going to look, even simply with the one move that has been made by the Los Angeles Rams? Significantly different.
What makes that differently? Or were you saying?
I'm just saying it's just a fact that things change.
Things have changed.
Things change. Perspectives have changed. Trades have been made. People have been changed. People have been swayed. And I think that's why, having the Lockenfors and the Bruglers and the Peter Schragers of the world on this show, these guys are paid professionals who have their ear to the streets, who are in. And I thought Dane Brugler was saying, I've almost seen draft boards of two to three of the top 10 teams.
Yeah.
That's insight that can sway a draft analyst one way or another to reproduce a new mock draft with, absorbing that information without giving too much away.
Of course. And I want to go find anybody that'll tell me they believe that the Rams are taking Wentz. I haven't heard it. I'm hoping that it's one of those things, one of those smoke screens, just the most elaborate smoke screen ever. But that's just not what I'm hearing.
He's in LA right now.
He is.
And if he is, that same girlfriend, never had an A, probably never had an STD, probably never, done any drugs. He's one of those guys that could be considered straight edge, never had alcoholic drink in his life. And from North Dakota, all they do is play PlayStation and work on their farm. That if he can convince Jeff Fisher and the general manager of the Los Angeles Rams to make him the face of the franchise, it may in fact be done. Because as Peter just said, Jared Goff's story is not all that interesting.
What do you mean? He's exactly what it's supposed to be.
That's what I get. But everyone loves the high and the low.
Sure. Sure.
So
he was a guy who was born to do this, basically. This
correct.
He is fulfilling his life's destiny.
But can you, the glass half empty, glass half full, is it too good to be true that he's destined to be that guy, number one overall? Or is it the story, the growth spurt from 5'10 to 6'5 in a matter of, 3.5-4 years to become the player that Carson Wentz has become, that someone latches onto, that a general manager or a head coach latch onto when it's you and me, a good steak, and maybe an alcoholic drink at a steakhouse in California? Does it happen then? And that's why those interactions, as I asked him, what happens? You get to know the guy.
Yep.
You're not trying to stump him anymore.
No.
You know who he is. Now you're really getting to know who he is to the core.
Absolutely. Let's go north of the border. Let's talk to our guy Cam from Canada. Cam.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Cam?
Congratulations, Matt, on a good game there.
Thank you, man. We've got business to finish, but yes, our kids competed their butts off.
It's interesting to follow that. I've been Dr. Kurt in my coaching career multiple times. That situation, it actually it brings back a lot of memories here. So I remember getting called on the carpet one time when I was coaching minor football, and They said I was a little bit too much on fundamentals and practicing a little bit too much. And I said, I just want to put guys in the NFL. And the commissioner of the league just sat back and said, oh, okay, right. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do here. So good for you guys for paying attention to detail. I think like Kim Dichie and Tunsil and Ramsey are potentially transgenerational guys, but they're 100th percentile guys. Would you guys agree with that?
Ramsey and Tunsil, you said?
As players, as physical players, that Kim Dichie, and we'll just go with Ramsey and Tunsil. I think they're 100th percentile guys. They're as good as it gets at the college level for their position. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think they're solid. Yeah, they're elite.
So my view is, with the second pick, if you're not going to take a 100th percentile guy, then you have to look at it, because I think 100th percentile always translates. And sometimes the 100th percentile player gets stuck somewhere, you know, later in the draft, or they develop later, like a Brady or whatever. But my view on this is, for the people, and the media is just losing their minds. Anything these guys are doing that makes sense, there's three or four guys in the media in Cleveland that are just jumping on them for the sake of it. And that's why we have so much turmoil in the fan base. But right now, if we can get an 85 at 7 or 8, and we can get a 70 at 72, and we can get another 70 at 81, that's a 225 among three players. That makes a lot more sense than getting an 89 or a 93 at the second pick. So if we're not taking, I think a 100th percentile player has a metaphysical value. They do. For some reason, if they're 100th percentile, they change teams. But if anybody's expecting us to take someone that's not a 100th percentile guy with the second pick, we're going to cause a lot of problems for the organization. We need value. We need an algorithmic value to be given to what we're going to do with our first three or four picks. And we need to start stocking the cupboards around here. To believe anything else is just not fair. If Goff is a 100th percentile guy, great. If Wentz is a 100th percentile guy, great. And they very well could be. But to go anything less than 100th percentile, I don't think makes a lot of sense.
I think that you're right about that, and that's why I think it's a matter of taking the guy or moving down. I think people here would be very happy if the Browns traded down, picked up a future first, picked up another second, picked up another third, and took Josh Doctson or Laquon Treadwell and got the guy that everybody thought was the best receiver in this draft. I think Browns fans would ultimately, at the end of the day, be happy with that.
Yes.
So we have to see what happens.
You know, a question that I have for you, Nathan, and we'll grab a break here, is why do so many Browns fans, early on it was Bosa to the Browns, and then we kind of, you know, I don't want to say shot it down at two, but knocked it down simply because of the fit questions.
Well, and by the way, all of these quote-unquote insiders, you have never seen once Joey Bosa to the Browns.
Correct. And you've never seen Ezekiel Elliott to the Browns either in any of these. But why do you feel that the Browns fan base, you know, via Twitter or Facebook or whatever, however they're reaching out, consistently want Elliott?
Because he's a running back from Ohio State.
Okay.
And it's clear that
he's a very good player.
And he's a great player. And people probably see him like, you know, an Adrian Peterson. Now, I'd say, how many Super Bowls has Adrian Peterson won? How many Super Bowls has Adrian Peterson been to? And there's so much to this league.
Has he been to an NFC Championship game?
Yes, that was the one where Favre threw the pick.
That's right.
At the end to New Orleans, and New Orleans went on to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you're right.
I think that's why. I think part of it, too, is I think people in Ohio have seen Elliott enough to know that he is going to be successful in the National Football League.
Agree.
Now, people thought Trent Richardson was going to be successful in the National Football League. That was a safe, sure thing pick, too. There is no such thing as a sure thing. I think at the end of the day, there is just a massive distrust of the Cleveland Browns organization because everything that they have done year after year after year after year after year after year has not been successful. It is unfortunate that we are in this point. I believe that we got to this point for a reason, because I'm very excited about the direction with Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta, Andrew Berry. But there is no reason to trust them yet. There is reason to be skeptical of them because of the lack of success from everybody else, even though it's not their lack of success. So that's not fair, but it is understandable. And I think that's why you see people of Browns fans, especially, kind of exasperated with what's going on. Look, we traded down and could have had Julio Jones. That did not work out. We traded down, could have had Sammy Watkins. That did not necessarily work out. We don't know yet. I mean, it's a little early, but Justin Gilbert so far has not delivered on his early pick, nor has Cam Irving. There's still time for both of them, but as of now, that doesn't look. You want blue chip players, and I think that's what the fans want. The fans want a blue chip player. And once they, because really the truth is, get a franchise quarterback, then you're in the position to trade down and get all of these other people, like the Tennessee Titans did. It really comes down to, though, I don't think any of you here listening, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed like no, if you thought that Carson Wentz was not a franchise quarterback in the eyes of this organization, would you still want him to take him at number two? Probably not, but it's hard to see what people truly think. And we don't know, and we won't know until well after the fact. We may not ever fully know what the Browns were thinking in this draft. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more phone calls, 216-578-0850 on CBD.
Coming up today on the Bruce Hooley Show, is there a penalty for being honest? There is if you're Urban Meyer talking about Cardale Jones. We start at 5 on KNR.
This is Bill Reed, GM at the Aloft Cleveland downtown. Spring is back and is nature's way of saying, let's party. WXYZ Lounge is a hot spot in the flats and is now partnering with some great local tastes to bring in the warm weather. Come check out German Nights featuring Hofbräuhaus Cleveland every Tuesday night. Authentic German foods and...
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Zagura, Wilhelm, and Dino. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Tony Franklin, the offensive coordinator for Jared Goff, while at Cal 230, Sir Andrew Gribble. We'll go back to the phones now. Dave in Avon is with us. What's up, Dave?
Not too much, guys. Yeah, I mean, if they like both quarterbacks pretty well, I mean, maybe they favor Goff, and let's say the Rams take Goff, and they take Wentz. They're going to say that was the guy they had targeted the whole time. Of course, sure. That's what they're going to say. We'll never know, but that's what they're going to say. But, you know, I get a feeling that, I don't know, you know, all this, you know, take this guy, oh, now this draft changes to this, or now you're speculating this, you know. Seems like the good organizations, you don't hear that as much. Like, they know what they want to pick. They know their needs. And they just pick the guy that they need. You know what I'm saying? Like, say the Ravens.
The difference is the Browns have a ton of needs, and the number one need is quarterback. So, obviously, if you're the Browns and Tennessee's picking first and they stay there, you know you get your pick of quarterbacks. Now you don't. So, I think it does change things, but it should be an easy scenario to plan for. They know that they're either going to draft Goff or Wentz. So you can run through Sarah's. If they draft Goff, we will do this. If they draft Wentz, we will do this. And I guarantee that that's what they're doing, and they are fully prepared for that. I don't think any. This is a surprise to them. I think they knew that it was very likely Tennessee would trade that pick.
I think so, too. I think if they get enough for two, if they don't really like Wentz, like you say, if Goff goes first, they probably should get out of there.
Right, it's just going to be a matter of...
sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if he's not the guy, I mean, I don't know if he is or not. I don't like him as much as Goff, but I'm not making the decision.
Yeah, we'll see. It's a matter of what they believe, and then what the market is. We'll see. We'll have to find out what happens. John Onicell, welcome.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. I'm out enjoying the weather in Meadville.
There you go.
Listening to you guys in Meadville, Pennsylvania.
Nice. Thank you.
I enjoy listening to your conversation every day. Keeps me informed and keeps me busy and keeps my mind off other things. But I hear two different stories going on. One time it's about how Goff is better and then Wentz is better. And I just don't understand. From what I heard about Goff, he runs a pretty simple offense and really doesn't have a whole lot of control over that where Wentz.
That's not true, and I would urge you, stay tuned at 2 o'clock. We'll talk to his offensive coordinator at Cal who will – tell you what he thinks about how complex the offense was and what the responsibilities were of Jared Goff in that offense.
Okay, well, that's just what I've been hearing, like I said before.
Yeah.
But, hearing Wentz had full control, but I'm more on the bandwagon of taking and letting RG3 see what he's got and moving down and taking Paxton or Connor, in my mind, and just swinging for the fence that way, to be honest. I think we need a big playmaker that can stretch the field. When was the last time we really had a good wide receiver that constrict the field for us. I think that's the big problem that we've had for a long time. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
I listen, they need playmakers. That's all I talk about. Surround this quarterback with playmakers, whether it be Goff, whether it be Wentz, or whether it be a mid-round quarterback that's going to back up RG3, who's here, who was a former rookie of the year in the NFL just 4 seasons ago. Get that quarterback some playmakers. I think it's imperative.
Nathan, I pose a question to you, and it's something that came up from the first caller, just with the trade and so on and so forth, is do you believe, and I guess – you know, the Rams don't make a move without a high inclination of what they're going to do at number one, okay? And as we've heard reports say that we're actively shopping number two, do you think that April 28th gets here, the Rams make their selection, and our phone rings at all throughout the 8 minutes that we have to select number two?
How often do I think it's going to ring?
No, I mean, is there a likelihood that it's going to ring?
Of course.
Like, on the clock, 8 minutes, our phone's ringing. Before it's a given.
Oh, yeah.
But I meant, like, once the Rams make their pick, is the phone ringing?
Yes. Okay. And that's why the Browns will take, I would imagine, all that time, unless the Rams do something the Browns didn't expect and take the guy that they, you know.
Right.
I still think
Correct. They'll
take that time to
see if anybody
would completely blow them away and make them an offer that they felt they couldn't refuse.
Correct. To get one of the two guys.
Yeah. Yeah, the phone will definitely be ringing. There will be some interest there. Doug in Shaker Heights.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Life is good.
Good.
I am just thinking about the number of times the Browns have picked quarterbacks, and I'm wondering if there's any kind of a graph or a statistic on the effectiveness of teams. Overall performance after they pick a quarterback with their first round pick. Because I'm thinking that if the Browns decide to not pick a quarterback, they can upgrade a lot of the holes that they have with better players.
To me, the number one, I agree with that philosophy, the number one hole to fill is quarterback. Once you fill that, you can really start attacking everything else. I don't believe that it is sound to go the other way. It doesn't work out very often. I think that that's much more of an anomaly. Again, if they feel that there is a franchise quarterback, they get that franchise quarterback. They take that franchise quarterback. That's what they do. If not, then they look like they are going to move down. That's it. So it seems pretty simple to me in terms of what the Browns have to do.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's why the NFL is a money-making machine, because they have an NFL draft. They have this three-and-a-half-month period for us to hype up the future prospects of the NFL. And then it allows, you know, everyone to evaluate team by team over and over and over again, and things happen. They reshuffle. It's reshuffling those decks time and time again at the blackjack table, and eventually it's going to play out. The cards are the cards, you know, and what you
Let's
do with them.
Let's get to that point.
By the way. Okay, click.
Yes. Please, let's get there. That's what I'm looking forward to, getting to this draft and figuring out exactly what it is that is going on here with the Cleveland Browns going forward. That's what I want to see. All right, we'll take a break here. At the top of the hour, Tony Franklin, the offensive coordinator for Jared Goff. We'll talk about that offense. Was it a simple offense? How complex were the responsibilities of Jared Goff? Could he go through those for us? We're going to get all those answers for you and ask him, of course, the most important question: would he make Jared Goff the face of his franchise in the National Football League? That's coming up at the top of this hour here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. The Crow!
Caw-caw!
My man Isaiah Crowell walking
Doug
through
Deacon.
The
Deacon!
The Deke! Yes, of course. The Browns
star-studded walking the halls.
Browns getting set to begin their voluntary mini camp today, which is going to start 3 days of practice. They can practice. They can't get in pads or anything
right.
like that, but they can at least go out
into
on
the structure
the field
of football
and get into the structure of football. Yes, which is very, very good, very important. Now the Browns have also, when they do things like this, do you remember these kind of voluntary?
I do.
How voluntary is a voluntary
That's a
minicamp?
It's a great point, because when you were, if you didn't tee me up on this, that's exactly where I was going to go. I would say 90, this is NFL wide. I'd say 95% of NFL rosters are at voluntary minicamps.
Okay.
So extremely high. Those individuals that are not at NFL minicamps are extremely high paid veterans that are training out of state, that may not have been training as a part of phase one, have not been training here in Cleveland or their respective city, who may or may, you know, kind of have a coach's excuse to not come in for the minicamp. Because otherwise they're just going to be, they're not going to take a lot of reps. They're just going to be standing around watching, so they just don't even come in for that minicamp. And B, as we found out last year, guys like Von Miller, guys last year like Tashaun Gibson holding out, who essentially have not signed a tender, either franchise tender or restricted free agency tender, will not be in attendance because they're technically not under contract, not having signed any type of tender. So they, as coming from a place of power, will not partake in the offseason program as well.
Yes.
So what we see on the field for practice is going to be a lot up to this point, minus the draft or any undrafted free agents, of what the Cleveland Browns are going to look like scheme-wise, conceptually, and roster-wise.
Yeah, it's pretty good to see them get out there and make some football moves. By the way, the Browns invited four players to try out at this voluntary mini-camp and hopefully secure a spot to come to training camp with the Browns. Defensive back Dak Swanson, number 41. He's 5'10", 190 out of Sam Houston State, 25 years of old age, most recently with the Miami Dolphins. James Brewer, who is a mountain of a man.
He is.
6'6", 323. We've been seeing him walk around. We're like, who the hell is that guy?
It was yesterday.
Yeah.
Which is probably when they brought him in, you know.
It was.
Signed him to some type of deal. And we're... You and I both pegged him for defense.
Yeah, he looked
because he walks around large and angry.
He looks unhappy.
Which might actually be a really good thing for the offensive line room.
Yeah, he's 6'6", 323, 28 years out of Indiana, last with the New York Jets. Wide receivers, two brought in. One of them who I know and like a lot, Salim Hakeem is the first, 5'11", 190, 26 out of Tarleton State, his last with the Chiefs. And then Cam Worthy, 6'2", 212.
Is this James Worthy's son?
No, he was at East Carolina with Stephon Diggs. They were the 1-2 punch at East Carolina. Not Stephon Diggs, he was at Maryland. Hardy, who went to the Falcons. Justin Hardy.
Okay.
Those two, Worthy and Hardy, were very good, prolific in that offense. 6'2", 212, 24. It was with the Ravens. And this is a guy that I think is a little bit of a project, but is one that certainly is worth developing, averaging over 18 yards a catch in college. I liked him. Dane Brugler thought coming out, priority free agent. This is the kind of guy that's got the size, speed, that could end up, you know, enhancing what the Browns have at wide receiver. I'm not expecting him to be a savior or a difference maker or anything like that, but this is a guy that certainly could come out and compete for a spot on this team when it is all said and done. And I think that that certainly would be a very good thing for the Cleveland.
Absolutely. Browns. Of course it's a great thing. You know, take a flyer. You never know. Diamond in the rough. And why don't you, while you're probably on ClevelandBrowns.com, highlight some of the jersey changes. Because I had an opportunity to go down to the Browns Media Center and sit in for Danny Shelton, who is now rocking the 55 as he did in college in honor of Junior Seau and his deceased brother. So therefore, there's been some other changes and updates as well.
Yeah, so RG3 will wear number 10 here. Got that from Darius Jennings. The other big thing, Danny Shelton, as you pointed out, will get number 55 for the Cleveland Browns. So that's kind of the housekeeping around here. When we come back, all the answers you want, and tweet me, at Nathan Zagura, at Browns_daily. Tweet us your questions that you would want to ask the offensive coordinator of Jared Goff, Tony Franklin, because he's going to be our guest when we return next.